This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, June 4th, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, in Washington, D.C., local lawmakers and residents fight a move by the federal government to impose a controversial immigration enforcement program. The verdict against former Egyptian leader Hosni Mubarak and acquittals of officials sparks protests and concern ahead of presidential voting. And we'll go to a small Pennsylvania community where residents are fighting to keep their properties, which are slated to be taken for a hydraulic fracturing project. Those stories and more coming up after this news.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. The Supreme Court will not stop the case against four former Blackwater guards charged with killing 14 Iraqi civilians in 2007. The four men opened fire at a busy crossroads in Baghdad after a car bomb exploded. The men claimed self-defense. Prosecutors say the shootings were unprovoked. The High Court rejected the claim that statements made by the guards after the incident were then used against them. The court did block another case, though, granting immunity for two U.S. Secret Service agents who arrested a man at a Colorado mall in 2006 after he approached former Vice President Dick Cheney, criticized his policy toward Iraq, and then touched his arm. Charges against Stephen Howards were later dropped. The government asked the courts for a broad immunity for so-called retaliatory arrests, but the court limited the immunity to the two officers in this specific case. Nearly a dozen patients in a drug rehabilitation center in Mexico were killed last night. Shannon Young reports.
Gunmen killed 11 people and wounded 10 others in a Sunday night attack on a drug rehabilitation center in the northern city of Torreón. The massacre came nearly a year to the day since 13 people were killed in a similar slaughter at another rehabilitation center in the same city. Rehabs have been the site of such attacks multiple times in the past few years. The motives are unclear. Authorities and media often infer the dead may have been former gang members who knew too much, but few murders in Mexico are fully investigated. In practice, the probability of an investigation diminishes if the victims are thought to be linked to organized crime. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
Tension in Gaza escalated over the weekend as a series of Israeli airstrikes killed two Palestinians and injured several others, including children. FSRN's Rami Al-Maghari has more.
Neighbors and friends of Gaza City's Mamoun Dilul offered condolences after his cheese factory was bombarded by Israeli war planes at daybreak today. It's the fourth time in as many years that Dilul's business has been destroyed by Israeli bombs.
This is a residential neighborhood, far away from the resistance, the borderlines, the occupation. I don't know why the Israelis claim that my dairy contains a weaponry store.
Over the weekend, the Israeli army launched a series of airstrikes on different parts of the Gaza Strip. On Sunday, an Israeli missile landed on a house in central Gaza Strip, slightly wounding four children. The escalation began early Friday morning when an Israeli soldier and a Palestinian militant were killed in a trade of fire on southeastern Gaza-Israel borderline. No Gaza-based armed faction claimed responsibility for the exchange of fire. Rami Al-Maghari, Free Speech Radio News, Gaza.
Palestinian prisoners in Israel say they will restart a mass hunger strike. Palestinian Minister of Prisoners Issa Karaka said today that Israel has failed to make good on their part of a deal with about 1,500 prisoners that ended a protest fast last month. Israel agreed to end solitary confinement, stop detaining Palestinians without charge, and allow family visits. But according to Karaka, at least 30 people have since been placed in administrative detention. Three drone strikes in 3 days have killed dozens of people in Pakistan. As many as 17 died today when drone operators remotely fired on a village in North Waziristan. Yesterday, a so-called follow-up strike launched by pilotless aircraft in South Waziristan killed 10 people who were gathered to mourn a man killed by a drone the day before. There's been an uptick in drone strikes since the NATO meeting in Chicago, where negotiators failed to agree on reopening an important overland supply route through the country. NATO leader Anders Fogh Rasmussen announced a Plan B today.
We also reached agreement on reverse transit from Afghanistan with three Central Asian partners, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Uzbekistan.
While far more expensive, Rasmussen says that this alternate route for egress from Afghanistan will provide a range of new options. And today marks 23 years since Chinese troops killed hundreds, perhaps thousands, of pro-democracy dissidents in Tiananmen Square. Hundreds of human rights activists were reportedly rounded up in advance of today's anniversary, and internet searches in the country on key terms referring to the crackdown do not garner results today. Last week, the father of one man killed in the massacre committed suicide in protest of decades of silence from Chinese authorities about the events that led to his son's death. For FSRN, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Federal authorities will implement the controversial immigration enforcement program, Secure Communities, in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. City council members and local residents are fighting the move by bringing legislation to a vote this week to mitigate the program's impact on the city's large immigrant population. FSRN's Alice Olstein reports.
When your human rights are under attack, what do you do?
Stand up, fight back!
When your human rights are under attack, what do you do?
Stand up, fight back!
When your human rights are under attack...
Immigrants' rights advocates joined public officials on Monday to protest the Department of Homeland Security's decision to activate the Secure Communities program in the District of Columbia. The federal program was initially optional, and D.C. was the first of many local jurisdictions, from Santa Clara, California, to Cook County, Illinois, to opt out. But federal officials changed their stance last summer and announced that Secure Communities is mandatory. D.C. resident Lisbeth Mateo with the Immigrant Youth Alliance told FSRN she's concerned the fingerprint sharing system will encourage racial profiling in D.C. and put the city's immigrant population at risk by making them afraid to report crimes to the local police.
For many years, we've been living in fear. We've been living like sort of behind the scenes, like hiding, not wanting to get attention to our situation or to ourselves, because we fear that if we speak out or we say something about our status, that we will get deported, that we will be jailed. And that's what living in the shadow feels like, you know, that you have to be ashamed, that you have to be afraid of what could happen.
Mateo, who came from Mexico with her parents as a young child, came out of the shadows herself only a few years ago after a traumatic incident motivated her to stand up for other undocumented youth.
I was unfortunately almost molested by a family member, and I didn't report that. I didn't call the police, even though I wanted to. I really wanted to. But I didn't, because I was afraid of being questioned by the police and, you know, having my parents be questioned. And so that's all I could think of, you know, would there be another 15-year-old, 14-year-old in the city who is never going to report a crime that happens to them or their families because of that fear?
On Tuesday, the D.C. City Council will vote on a bill introduced by Phil Mendelson, which narrows the scope of the program, so only those over 18 years of age and charged with a violent crime are targeted.
We're not going to be cooperating with immigration authorities and hold people indefinitely. And we're not going to cooperate with immigration authorities and hold people on mere suspicion when they haven't been convicted of a crime of violence.
Starting Tuesday, local police will have to share the fingerprints of everyone booked with the Department of Homeland Security. But Mendelson says his bill would bar the police from detaining undocumented individuals who pose no threat to public safety. The bill also demands the federal government reimburse any local D.C. funds spent complying with the program. In addition to safety and human rights concerns, Councilmember Michael Brown and other D.C. officials also oppose the federal immigration program as an additional violation of the district's right to self-governance.
Anytime the federal government, the United States Congress, wants to impose their will on the District of Columbia, we should always fight against it. We should always take the resident side, our citizen side, our D.C. taxpayer side against anybody that tries to impose their will on our jurisdiction.
As the council takes up the bill, local groups and the city's Office of Latino Affairs are reaching out to the more than 1 million immigrants in the D.C. area who may be unsure of the scope and impact of Secure Communities. Sarahi Uribe with the National Day Labor Organizing Network says it's vital for undocumented individuals to know their basic rights.
No law enforcement officer is supposed to inquire about a person's immigration status, and if someone is detained in the jail, they are not supposed to be interviewed by ICE officials unless they have a court order.
The Obama administration has vowed to implement secure communities nationwide by 2013, but immigrants' rights advocates in D.C. and across the country say they'll continue to organize against the program. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
In Pennsylvania, residents are resisting an eviction at a mobile park that is set to be turned into a water facility for hydraulic fracturing. Residents at the Riverdale Mobile Park in Piatt Township have been protesting the eviction notice for months. The company, Aqua America, said it plans to remove the park and build a water withdrawal facility that will be used in natural gas production. The official eviction date has now passed and residents barricaded roads. For more, we go to the site to speak with Deb Eck, a resident of Riverdale Mobile Park and one of the few left who has vowed to fight the eviction. Deb Eck, welcome to FSRN.
Thank you.
The eviction was scheduled for last Friday, June 1st. Give us an update on the situation today.
Well, we're still here. The eviction was not carried out. We've all been cleaning up here in the park. We've got some barricades ready to go. Just trying to keep everybody's spirits up, and basically, we're just kind of hanging out, eating, and getting to know each other.
And how have you seen any signs of construction in the area?
No, we haven't seen any actually like signs of construction, but we did have what we thought was going to be a construction meeting, between the construction crew or whoever. We thought that might have been going to be taking place here at the park today. That did not materialize. I think they may have just had that construction meeting up the road a ways, because we did see quite a bit of activity up the road. So.
And you said you have barricades ready. As of now, are any of the roads barricaded, actually, or are those just waiting?
Well, they were barricaded. We had an issue with the former landowner who has right-of-way through the property to get to the property that's part of the 25 acres that he didn't sell. He came down through. They asked who he was. He threw a fit, called the police, the state police. They came up and told us that it was a public road and that we couldn't have the barricades there and we couldn't ask who anybody was. We have since found out that it is not a public road. It's a private road.
How many families are there now, and how many residents would be affected by this project?
Well, originally there were 32 with a couple of stragglers that would come in and hang out for the summertime just because it was such a beautiful place to be. Then when this whole thing broke on February 18th, we had 32 families. Couldn't give you a number of how many actual individuals, but 32 families, 32 occupied units. And they started dwindling down. We are currently now down to 7 occupied trailers.
7, as you said? 7 trailers?
Yeah, 7 trailers.
Everybody else has left, or?
No, that's anybody that left. It was over the weekend.
And how long have you lived there?
Just a little over 10 years.
And talk about what that community has meant for you.
I guess I could sum it up in this one little, it takes a village to raise a child. When I moved in here, my daughters were 7.5 months old, the twins. Full-time mom, working full-time. I relied a lot on the people that I got to know here in the park. And it took a village to raise those two little girls. When I was working and maybe I made, I don't know, whatever for dinner, the neighbor would say, you know where the girls went. My girls would leave in the morning if I wasn't here to go to get on the school bus. Somebody was watching them from the time they left my place till the time they got on the bus.
And what does the place feel like now? You said most of the families have left, 7 trailers left.
The 7 trailers left. There's a couple of shells of trailers that have been torn apart. The siding, the aluminum siding, has been scrapped just to try and get these people some money out of what they bought and paid for however many years ago. So there's quite a few of those with insulation, you know, bare insulation, no doors, no windows. Looks like a tornado hit it. Looks like a tornado bared down on this community and took 75% of it out.
If you have to leave your home, where will you and where will your family go?
I have no idea. Have absolutely, positively no idea. I don't have the funds to move my trailer, and there's trailer parks here that won't take my trailer because it has a metal roof, metal siding. You know, we basically, I mean, when it comes right down to it, short of moving in with my niece, we have nowhere. We would, I guess, kind of be refugees, be homeless.
You're describing a situation now where barricades are ready if construction were to go forward. What are the next steps in this action that you're involved in?
Well, like I said earlier, there's a meeting with the legal representation for the residents of the park tomorrow, sometime in the morning, with Aqua America. And we're hoping that there's some kind of negotiations. They're willing to come to the table and let's get this resolved.
Deb Eck is a resident of Riverdale Mobile Park in Pennsylvania. She and her community face eviction to pave the way for a water project for hydraulic fracturing. Deb Eck, thank you for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
Wisconsin's recall election takes place tomorrow, and voters will decide whether Governor Scott Walker will serve out the rest of his term. This election has been 16 months in the making, the culmination of protests over the governor's anti-union legislation and his cuts to public education, health care, and the state university system. From Madison, Wisconsin, FSRN's Molly Stentz has the story.
It was a sunny June weekend in Wisconsin, one that ordinarily might have inspired fishing, boating, or barbecuing. But instead, thousands were calling their neighbors and knocking on doors talking politics. With polls showing the race for the governor's seat as a toss-up, Wisconsinites are focused on voter turnout. Governor Scott Walker has been campaigning up and down the state, stopping mostly at manufacturing companies. He spoke at a print shop in suburban Milwaukee on Friday.
Well, first off, so I can get it right off the bat, I'm here to ask for your vote today. I'm here to ask for your vote for me. I'm here to ask for your vote for Rebecca Clayfish, because you got to get her elected as well. And I went with your help. This shirt I'll be proud to wear on Wednesday morning and still be Governor Scott Walker of the great state of Wisconsin.
Walker brought with him South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, another Tea Party-backed governor who was elected in 2010.
The reason this governor from South Carolina cares is because he had the courage to go through the burn. He had the courage to take it on even when it got ugly, and he never stopped. He never stopped.
Walker's challenger, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, held a rally of his own on Friday in a downtown Milwaukee park.
And my concern is for the middle class of this state and the people who want to join the middle class. Those are the people who need representation right now in the governor's office in Madison, Wisconsin.
Barrett did not have the high-profile public support of President Barack Obama, who was campaigning nearby in Illinois and Minnesota. But for some Democrats, he had the next best thing, former President Bill Clinton. Clinton preached the virtues of cooperation and unity over divisiveness and conflict.
This divide and conquer, no compromise crowd, if they'd been in control, there never would have been a United States Constitution. You ought to read the debates that happened among our founding fathers before the Constitution. They were vigorous, they were vital, and they were tough, and they dealt with really hard issues. But the goal was to get to an agreement. The goal was to allow us to come together.
Here in Madison, the labor PAC, We Are Wisconsin, threw a free concert on the lawn of the local labor hall Friday night. Musician Tom Morello, who camped out in the Capitol last year with the protesters, came back to rev up the crowd.
So let's get Governor Walker out Tuesday before prosecutors get him out and put him in jail. Sign up. Sign up to canvass tomorrow and all the days before the election. And sign up before you leave. Don't leave here without signing up.
In the crowd was Andy Height, a public employee and union steward with AFSCME. He says he's working hard for the recall, even though Barrett wasn't his first choice as a candidate. Barrett publicly distanced himself from organized labor during the campaign.
If Walker wins, we get the fight of our lives in our hands. Everything we care about and hold dear is going to be under attack. I work for Dane County Human Services, the programs that are so critical to supporting low-income families, people with disabilities, people with mental health issues, the elderly. You're going to be devastated. The safety net is going to be devastated. We're going to be in the fight for our lives, for our jobs, for our communities. Barrett wins. We still have the same fight.
That sentiment resonates with Ken Klippenstein, who wants to see a reoccupation of the Capitol on Election Day.
And that's what we're trying to do here, show people that no matter who wins, we want to continue the fight in the streets rather than only in the ballot box.
Reverend Jesse Jackson was also in Wisconsin over the weekend, making stops in Milwaukee and Racine, urging people to get out and vote. And the Koch brothers supported advocacy group Americans for Prosperity chartered a bus and made nearly a dozen stops across the state, holding rallies in support of Governor Walker. The State Elections Board estimates that turnout will be between 60 and 65% statewide on Tuesday. Molly Stentz, FSRN, Madison.
Where do you go for political news and analysis? Finding in-depth coverage that doesn't rely on wire services or talking heads isn't easy. But at Free Speech Radio News, we feature uncompromising coverage of politics domestically and abroad.
The bill, as it stands, appears to eliminate citizen appeal rights.
The drone bombing in the southern of Yemen affected weakening al-Qaeda, but it also had huge human costs.
FSRN's political coverage is unlike anything else on the radio dial. Our stories don't just include elected and appointed officials. Our reporters talk to people involved in political movements, those who are on the ground and affecting change. We do all this without advertising or corporate contributions. Visit our website, fsrn.org, for all of our political reporting. That's fsrn.org. In Egypt, youth groups and the Muslim Brotherhood are calling for massive protests to continue tomorrow following 3 days of demonstrations sparked by the sentencing of former leader Hosni Mubarak and the acquittal of his sons and members of his regime. The reaction has sharpened political differences ahead of the upcoming presidential runoff. The Real News' Jihan Hafiz has more.
It was a conviction that sent shockwaves throughout Egypt. Former President Hosni Mubarak was sentenced to life in prison nearly 18 months after he was ousted by a popular revolt. The 84-year-old Mubarak was found guilty of ordering his security forces to open fire on peaceful protesters during the revolution. Mubarak's despised interior minister, Habib al-Adli, was given the life sentence for his role in killing hundreds of Egyptians. However, al-Adli's assistants, charged with carrying out the deadly orders to subdue demonstrators, were acquitted, along with Mubarak's sons, Gamal and Alaa Mubarak.
Anyone from the interior ministry should never be found innocent. No member of the police force should ever be found innocent.
Upon hearing Mubarak's verdict, a number of protests made their way to Tahrir Square denouncing the sentencing. They say that Mubarak has blood on his hands and is not only responsible for the nearly 1,000 people who died during the 18-day uprising, but also the deaths of many of those during his 30-year reign. A number of family members of the victims are here in Tahrir Square, and they talk about how justice has not been brought to them, despite the fact that their former dictator is now going to spend the rest of his life in prison.
They shot my brother in his heart. He was 26 and has a 3-month-old baby.
He got married just a year prior. The ones who actually murdered came out innocent.
As hundreds converged here in Tahrir Square, a number of smaller marches broke off and tried to head down the notorious Mohammed Mahmoud Street, which leads to the hated Interior Ministry. As you can see, a number of protesters set up a security barricade. Mubarak's life sentencing comes barely 2 days after the lifting of the reviled emergency law. Egypt was under a state of emergency for more than 3 decades. The Islamic-backed parliament voted against the law after it was further imposed by the military junta during the transitional period. Human rights activists cite that under the emergency law, tens of thousands of Egyptians were rounded up, detained, and convicted. Meanwhile, at the entrance to Tahrir Square, anger toward Mubarak is shifted to his former prime minister, now a top contender in Egypt's presidential race. This is a triumphant moment for protesters who have been actively campaigning against the possible presidency of Ahmed Shafiq. A group of young people climbed this building here and tore down one of the billboards of Ahmed Shafiq, Mubarak's former prime minister. In what's very reminiscent to the 18-day uprising here in Egypt, a number of protesters back then were ripping down Mubarak's billboards. Now, in a sign of disgust and disdain toward Ahmed Shafiq's possible candidacy, people are tearing down his billboards. As you can see, there's a cheering crowd below that just came from Tahrir Square. Celebrating protesters rush pieces of Ahmed Shafiq's destroyed billboard toward Tahrir Square, where it's burnt and stomped on.
Nobody here wants Shafiq. Hopefully he won't be in power. He's a thief, and we had him. We know what he's about.
As usual, a number of security barricades have been set up at the entrances leading into Tahrir Square. Protesters who converged here this morning say they're expecting thousands more to come to partake in another occupation against the military council and against their elections that are due to take place later this month. Jahan Hafiz for The Real News, Cairo, Egypt.
To view a video report of this story, go to therealnews.com. That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kump. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapshi and Janine Etter. Our Washington intern is Ness Smith Salvador. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.